so one of the classes that I took in ministerial school was called A New Myth of God. And that class was really about how so many people have a need to define God in a way that really fits, and how we have that need to define God and to perceive God in a way that fits and that rings true to us. One of the things the class talked about was in that traditional Judeo-Christian philosophy and view, what happens is those stories in the Bible are really about stories about one individual's experience of how they experience the divine. And so the problem is, though, is those stories have become encrypted, and in turn we are taught that that is what God is, and that is the way that we should experience God. And if we're not experiencing God in that way, then it's not really spiritual experience, and it's not really real, because that's the way to do it. And so because we were raised with that, many of us kind of revolt. And we either give up religion altogether or say, I don't believe in God. But what we're really saying is, I don't believe in that God. Or we find a philosophy that fits, like this one here, that fits more like what spirituality and spiritual experience and that divine presence, how we perceive that and experience that on the inside. And so, like I said, many of us revolt, and the reason that we revolt against that traditional perspective is because it is outside of our own spiritual experience, of what spiritual experience feels like to us, or because it doesn't really make sense to us, or because it doesn't fit our felt experience of things. And so in reality, though, each and every single one of us on this planet experiences that divine presence and divinity and spirit in their own unique ways. And it's different for all of us. And so for many of us, we experience that which I will call the sacred, that which we call God, that which is that great something that is beyond this. You know what I mean when I say that is beyond, that thing that we feel that is beyond. A lot of us, we experience that when we're in nature. Yes, do you have that experience of that when you're in nature? Or we have an experience of that when we see a new baby being born. Or we even see puppies or kittens being born. There's something that's just magical about that. Or even seeing a new baby and looking into that face, there's something that is beyond. Sometimes we experience that sacred thing, seeing a magnificent sunset. And in watching that sunset, there's this sense of awe, and it has a sense of being beyond. Or perhaps you have that experience when you make love, and those sense of your own personal boundaries dissolve, and there's an experience of at-one-ment with something else. You are more than this physical body. Or perhaps it's listening to a beautiful piece of music where you feel like you just melt into that music. There are many different ways we experience that, which is beyond words and beyond description and beyond names, but we know it when we feel it, and we know it when we experience it. And in any of those experiences, we have that experience of sacredness. This thing has a sacredness to it. We often have an experience of oneness. We have an experience of beauty that is beyond description, of a something that is beyond description. And in that class, the New Myth of God, they call that the numinous. We have a numinous experience. And so one time I was on vacation at Sequoia National Park and took a hike there at what is called Morro Rock. And if you've ever been to Morro Rock, there's a trail that you walk along, and then you get to this huge, massive rock, and there are steps that are carved into it, and there's about 100 steps, and your view is blocked, and you can't see anything because you're walking along this rock. And then I came around this corner to this magnificent view of the Continental Divide. In the middle of summer, these mountains covered in snow, and I burst into tears. That's what I'm talking about when we have that experience that is beyond words. I don't have words to say why it brought me to tears. And I've had that experience seeing beautiful pieces of art and seeing theater, there's something, it touches something inside of us. It takes our breath away. It brings us to tears. It dissolves our boundaries of our everyday self. It dissolves that sense of smallness and isolation that we have from everything and everyone. And there's an expansiveness somehow that happens. That separateness is kind of dissolved. And so I know for many of us in this room and those of us who have been in this philosophy have actually taken time and conscious effort and intention to define or redefine how we see that presence, what we call that presence, that great something that we call God, the divine, the infinite. We redefine that in a way that rings true for us inside of here, that presence that can't be fit into a box. And so the title of my talk today is The Truth Shall Set You Free. And what I'm talking about is that the way that we see the divine, the way that we perceive that infinite presence, that one, life with a capital L, determines and creates the way that we experience it. It not only determines and creates the way that we experience that one, but it also determines how we experience life, and what we expect from life, and what we are open to or what we are not open to. Or said in another way, what we believe to be the truth either sets us free or sets us in bondage. What we believe to be the truth and what we believe to be the truth about that presence sets us free or puts us in bondage. And so I know that for many of us, we were raised with that idea that God was this man up in the sky. And he was separate and apart from creation. He created everything that was, but then he's up in heaven and we're down here separate from him. We also may have embodied or learned that that man, God in the sky, is father, is judge, is loving sometimes, but also can be angry and can be punishing if we are bad or if we do something wrong or if we're not good enough. What is really happening there is we are projecting our relationship with our parents onto this God. And then we need that to win that God's favor or that God's approval in order to be good enough and in order to get the goodies in life. But that is really a limited perspective. It's really kind of an adolescent perspective of that divine presence. It's undeveloped. And so with time and with effort and with intention, what happens is we can expand how we see that presence. We can expand our idea of what that presence is. We recognize that it is an infinite presence. Not a man in a body, but an infinite presence that permeates all things, that is everywhere present all of the time. We recognize that it is that which is at the center and the circumference of everything that exists. We recognize that it is not a being, but that it is being itself, beingness itself, that it is life with a capital L, that it is wholeness, that it is beauty. Can you imagine if you defined that one or named that one beauty, how you would experience God differently? Every time you saw something beautiful, you would say, that is that presence expressing. Every time you saw a beautiful interaction between two people or a parent and a child, beauty, I see that beauty. That is the divine presence. How we see it, how we name it, creates the lens through which we experience it. And so we recognize it as a love intelligence and as infinite potentiality, as an energy that permeates everything in and through and around and as everything that exists. That absolute intelligence, that harmony, that magnificence that is everywhere. And so those ideas, that expanded awareness of what that divine presence is, and to see it as that great thing that is at the center of everything and that is everywhere present, is not unique to us here at Centers for Spiritual Living. It is the basis of new thought. And the transcendentalist movement that happened in the 1830s, that is what we were born out of, and that came about because people were dissatisfied with religion. And so this entire new thought movement has been born out of that, which is Christian Science and religious science and divine science and unity. But it is also that belief system and perspective is called panentheism, and it is the basis of Hinduism. It is the basic of Hasidic Judaism and of Kabbalah and of the Sufis and of the Gnostics and of Eastern Orthodox Christianity. It's called the perennial philosophy, and it is that which all mystics come to realize is the truth, that that is infinite and everywhere present, permeating everything. And so even though we pursue this perspective, even though we have embodied this idea, I think for all of us, we still sometimes find that those old childhood ideas pop up. Those old childhood ideas sneak in. And so one of the ways that I see that and hear that in my life is when someone has a heartfelt desire to have something in their life, say it's a new romantic relationship, or it's a new job, or it's a new home, or it's moving, or it's greater health, or it's greater abundance, but they have this heartfelt desire to have something, and it's not yet happening, and I hear them say, maybe God doesn't want me to have this. Maybe God doesn't want me to have this. Or I see people that have things going on in their life that aren't desirable, and they say, maybe God's testing me. Or maybe God's punishing me for something that I've done. But you know what? God does not test you. And God does not punish you. And God does not give to you. And God does not withhold from you. God is the good that is ever present. God is the good that is everywhere present in and through and around and as everything. It's not a dispenser of good. It is the good, the presence that is the good, that is the love, that is the creative genius of the universe, that is love and peace and wholeness and power. It is that that is in everything. We can't be separate from that. God is not a being with moods and judgments and whims. That's the old childhood God that we learned about that's a reflection of parents. God is the good that's everywhere present. And so Ernest Holmes says the universe is governed by a beneficent consciousness. That beneficent consciousness is in everything and everywhere present. He also says all bondage is a result of a circumscribed or limited viewpoint of reality. Every time we find ourselves in our life experiencing bondage, it's because we believe somehow in limitation. We believe we can't have it. We believe it's separate from us. We believe we don't deserve it. There's something that is within us that is causing us to block the flow. When we see good as separate or apart from us, or when we see the good as separate or apart from our lives, or when we see the good as being withheld from us, what happens is our perspective and our beliefs create that exact thing happening in our life. Because that's what we believe. Because that's what we're holding on to. Because our perspectives and our beliefs inform our experience. And so I read a story in A Daily Dose of Sanity this week that I'd love to share with you that is such a great depiction of that, that our perspectives and our beliefs inform our experience. It says, education annals tell of an elementary school teacher, we'll call Miss James, who arrived at her classroom on the first day of the term and studied her class roster. To her delight, she saw high IQ marks next to each name, 121, 128, 138. "Thank goodness," she said. "Finally, a class where I can accomplish something with." Miss James gave the students challenging lessons and freedom to create. As expected, they all excelled, and at the end of the grading period, most received A's. The next day, the principal called her into his office and said, "How did you turn those low-functioning students into geniuses?" he asked. She said, "What do you mean?" pointing out their IQs on her register. The principal studied the register and shook his head. "Those are their locker numbers," he explained. The expectation and the perception creates what we go for, what we move toward, what we expect, what we create. We do that all subconsciously. We don't know that we're doing, but that's how life works. That's the lens through which we see things. So what that says to me then is that it behooves us to look at how we are defining that infinite one. Ernest Holmes says, freedom from bondage is a thing that must be inwardly perceived. And so we do this inward work to see, how am I perceiving that infinite one? We do this inward work, like reading things that are spiritually inspiring. Or we come to church, we take classes, we do spiritual mind treatment where we move our minds above what is already fixed in this world to the absolute, where we can know something greater and set something new in motion, only because we've created a new lens for ourselves to look through. It's already available. God doesn't then dispense that good that you're wanting. We change the lens through spiritual mind treatment. And when you're reading things that feel spiritually inspiring to you, it's not like you're taking something and you're putting it in, you're feeding yourself this new thing. You read it and it's inspiring because you already know it in here. It stirs something that you already know. Then you remember it. Then you're looking at your life through that lens instead. That's the thing that creates healing. And so then it behooves us to define or redefine, if it's not working for you, the way that you see that infinite presence in a way that supports you in living your best life. Seeing that presence in a way that enables you to thrive. Seeing that presence in a way that leads to a rich and a rewarding and a satisfying life. So we do that and we contemplate that presence so that we see it instead as an infinite potentiality, so that we see it as the good itself, so that we see it as a life presence that is everywhere, the great healer, wholeness itself, the divine emancipator, the I am of our I am. We work with that. Here's the biggest thing. If you take anything away from this, this is what I want you to take away. It also behooves us to recognize and know that the will of God is identical to the nature of God. The will of God is identical to the nature of God. And the nature of God is joy and love and peace, and wholeness, and infinite potential, and harmony, and order. And the will of God is only to express itself as that which it is. God has no desire to withhold from you in your life. God's will and desire is to express. That's the only desire and will of God, to express as that which it is, as that which its nature is. And so then, when we have that realization that that is the will of God, and that the will of God is always toward expression and greater expression and towards fulfillment, what happens is we open ourselves to new possibilities. We open ourselves to new ideas, and we align ourselves with something that is greater in possibility than what we've experienced before. because we have a new idea. Then we end up living a greater life. And it makes me think of that movie, The Blind Side. Did you see that movie, The Blind Side? Yeah. And so if you don't know, that's about a boy named Michael Orr. Is that how you say his name? Orr? And so he's a homeless teen in the movie who has drifted in and out of school for years and being homeless and not thriving and not succeeding. And he is taken in by Lee Ann Tuohy and her husband. They take him in and have him live with them, and eventually they become his legal guardians. He overcame so many roadblocks that he had had in his life. He ended up graduating high school and graduating college and going on to play with the NFL. And one of the biggest pieces, I think, of why he was succeeding, it became possible in his mind. Before he lived with them, that did not exist as a possibility in his thinking. It changed his ideas of what was possible. That's why we look at how we perceive that divine presence. Is it blocking us from the good that we desire, the way that we see it, the way that we hold it, the way that we name it? Is the way that you are defining that presence, does it support you in living your greatest life? Does it support you in making your heartfelt desires come to life and come to fruition? Is the way that you explain or see or perceive that divine presence to yourself, does it enable you to thrive? If not, redefine it. Spend some time reading, studying, meditating, listening within here, and redefine it and write about it. Come up with 27 names that you can call that presence. Come up with different things and ways that you see that it expresses in your own life and in this world. I love that song we sing. I let the grace wash over me. I let the love wash over me. I let the peace wash over me. All of that is that divine presence. Each way we see it and name it, we get to experience it. And if that word God brings up ideas about that old God that you learned about in childhood that is judgmental and that withholds from you and that is separate, find a different word. Or find 7 different words that work for you. Find a new name that better fits with what it is that you believe, with what it is that rings true for you. Call it the truth, or call it beauty, or call it the infinite, or call it light, or call it that which is at the center of everything. It doesn't matter what you call it. It matters for you how you name it and what you call it. God doesn't care. And practice meditation, because in meditation you move beyond this dual world. You move beyond that place of polarities to where there is only that infinite presence. In Living the Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes says, prayerful communion ascends that place where unity has not yet become variety, where the unformed one is ready to take form into any specific shape. We move into the absolute presence where it is ready to take form as any shape that you believe in, any shape that you perceive, any shape that is the lens that you're looking through. It is available and ready to become what you believe, what you perceive, what you accept as the truth and as reality. And from that place of the absolute one, there you claim your good. There you proclaim your good. You pronounce your good. And in as much as we speak the truth, God itself has spoken. You line yourself up with that which is infinite. And as a result, you'll be experiencing freedom from the places of stuckness in your life. You'll be leaving behind that which feels limited and limiting and stepping into that which is expansive and that which is fulfilling and that which is satisfying and that life that you've come here to live. And so blessings to each one of you on this path of discovery, discovering that infinite presence within you and all around you, and this path of giving way to that and living your greatest life. Blessings to all of you. And so I invite you to join me in a spiritual mind treatment, our form of affirmative prayer. And it is from that place of being immersed in this infinite potentiality, in this absolute unformed substance. It is from this place that we open ourselves and become conduits for it to flow into our lives. And so right now we recognize it as love, and we recognize it as infinite potential, as boundless good, that which is forever unfolding itself and forever pouring itself forth as all of creation, that which is beyond description and beyond name, but that we feel at the very center of our hearts, that which is closer than our very breath, that which is before us and behind us and beside us, above us, below us, and within us, is that infinite life. And it is from this place of boundlessness that we claim the good that we desire. We claim health and wholeness. We claim harmony in our relationships. We claim perfect and beautiful relationships. We claim from here abundance, recognizing that that one is opulence itself, that it is infinite in its beingness, and we revel in this presence and in our openness and in our receptivity. It flows into our lives as magnificent good, as the blessing and the fulfillment of our heartfelt desires. And so in this place of connection, in this place of oneness, I also claim and know peace. And we become conduits for peace to enter this world. And through our own minds, being that there is only one mind, peace flows into the world through our thinking and through our beliefs, healing of relationships, healing of disparity, healing between people and countries and political parties. For this one is having its way right here and right now. And we say yes to that. And we participate in that activity. And so it is with a heart filled with gratitude that I release this prayer into that infinite law that always responds according to our belief and our acceptance. And so we accept it and we know it. And I release this prayer and we live this reality. And I say, and so it is.